Welcome to another episode of Framed Conversations with special guest Jessica Enevold Duncan, or Dr. Jess, your creative PT for a kick-ass life. We will talk about frames, Wonder Woman, and how to live a kick-ass life. Framed Conversations explores what it takes to become who you were supposed to be. I am Åsa Rydhard, your host, a cultural analysis, executive trainer, public speaker, former pastor, and social impact guide. Now, let's meet today's guest. Today's episode, I have a very special guest, a doctor in philosophy, professor and my former tutor, Jessica Enevold from Lund University. But right now she's actually taking a break. And I got curious when I met her again a few years later, because she's not only that super fancy academic professor and PhD, whatever. She's also, as I learned, a certified intentional creativity teacher and coach, cosmic co-girl, eclectic artist, certified massage therapist, certified physiotherapist, and change and educational consultant. And she calls herself Dr. Jess, your creative PT for kick-ass life and love. And as you can see, Jess, I had to read this. Yeah, everyone noted, because there were so many long and interesting titles. But welcome to this talk show.
Thank you, Åsa. I think you did a really good job getting all that done.
Thank you. I did my best. But, you know, it's not always that easy. And I'm Swedish, as everyone can hear. And so are you. But this is in English because we have a broad audience who wants to learn more about you. And so do I. I'm so curious. And the reason why I got really interested in your work today and what you do and your mission is that you are on a mission to help others find their Wonder Woman powers. And I'm not really sure if you are fully aware of what that means to me, because this is so tight connected to what I do. I actually ran a course a few years ago named Grow Into Your Superhero Course, Become a Superhero. And it's about breaking frames. So today I talk about break your frames and step up as a leader. And I know that we meet in our work with our clients a common challenge, a joint challenge, because as I see it, the most important thing I have to do is to make people realize that they actually have superpowers, that they are experts, they are professionals, and I need to help them find the courage to step forward. And as I say, become more visible than they ever thought in their life would be comfortable. What do you think? Is it this one of the most hard steps you have to make people unblock their willingness to accept their own superpowers?
I think it's one of the hardest things for everyone, yeah, regardless if they're men or women, but women in particular, of course.
Yeah, but I must tell you a secret then before we start with your story, because I'm so super curious about why and how you ended up doing what you do today. As most people I help is women. Are women, and to my lectures or my speeches and workshops, there are women coming in. But what many don't know is that when it comes to private clients, I also have men, and especially technical managers. Mm-hmm. And they have something in common, and that is the idea that they are not important. Yeah. What they do and what they know is important, but they themselves are not important. Yeah. That's interesting, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So tell me, Jessica, how did you end up doing what you do today? Where did it start?
Where did it start?
Because you were working at the university when I knew you. Yeah.
Yes. And I've worked at the university for quite a long time. And my university work is, of course, connected to my experiences in life, which were all in insights about what it is to be a woman in the world today. Mm-hmm. And I've done that for many years. And you want me to talk about when I stopped doing that?
Sorry?
Do you want me to start talking about when I stopped doing that? Or?
So, yeah, because I find it interesting because you have done a lot of research and study, and that comes from somewhere, of course, your drive to dive into these questions. And I assume that you met a lot of things and hinders and blocks and structures and whatever within the university world. But you also told me, because you grew into the academic world, I suppose, and then suddenly you decided to do something else.
Yes. Yes, it was one summer about 9 years ago now, when I was talking to some of my friends that I hadn't seen for 14 years. And they said, well, we have moved up north, and why don't you come and see us? And I said, well, can I come this week? And they said, yes, you're more than welcome. But we just have to warn you, we are giving a mandala painting course that week. And I said, you know, unknowingly, it's like, oh, whatever, I can do anything. I'll take the course and I'll just hang out with you. And it was a lovely experience. And I didn't think so much about it at the time. But I think on the second or third day, all of a sudden it was like, boom, something happened. And I all of a sudden felt completely awake, as if I had been living in a bubble or a dream. And I looked around as if I had new eyes. I saw things differently. And I also recognized an earlier version of myself. And I was wondering, I was recognizing something that I had experienced previously. And the past 10, 14 years, like, they just felt like they were like a haze, or it was something that had just happened. And now I was present. I was present to myself, and I was listening. I could see, I could hear, I could do things differently.
Well, this is interesting, because so many ideas comes up in my head. And one thing is that sometimes we need to move out of our normal world to be able to see ourselves. But the other interesting thing is that might more interesting right now is what I hear, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you woke up and realized that something had gone lost in these years. You have lost something within these years, because you look back and you see something that you are not today.
Well, I think that it's not so much as a loss, as something that is maybe dormant, as sleeping. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we're talking about is that being present, mm-hmm. being present to yourself and to the world. And all those years were spent dedicated to achieving something, and which were not necessarily perhaps aligned with something that would, with, I don't know, alternative terms, be called your inner self, or your inner goals, or your inner purpose, or something that felt that you were aligned, something you were aligned with. I sometimes talk about Thor's gates. If you've ever seen the popular culture movie about Thor, the god, and how in order for him to come down to earth, all the seven gates have to align from heaven all the way down, and mm-hmm. for him to like descend like this. And that's the kind of experience that is, to all of a sudden feel that everything is aligned. Whew, and then you know exactly what you need to do, or you feel like I'm in the right place. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much a sense of loss. It's more a sense of perhaps recognition of something that was started but had to step aside because other things took precedence.
Yeah, and other things, I imagine, is the demands from the academic world, right?
Yes, both the academic world and creating or maintaining a family, finishing a PhD, moving, all these everyday things that we do, sometimes without thinking about them because we are just raised to think that we have to do them. And they don't necessarily have to be unpleasant or not fun. It's just that we have a tendency to do this. I'll do this first, and then I'll do the rest.
Yeah.
And the rest is never gets done.
Yeah, and forgive me if I say so, but I think, looking around myself, my friends, the world, people I meet, that especially women have a tendency to think, everything else first, myself then, later. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Others first, me later. And that might end up in never being me, because...
Yeah. Well, we're often also trained to be, you know, good, and we're trained to be servicing other people. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, if we fall into the category of helpers, and then, yes, it's such a great feeling to be appreciated for helping others, and then you get stuck in that, and then also you actually forget to help yourself, right?
Yes, of course. And, you know, when you say we are trained, I must say that it's not always that this means that people are training you or actively telling you.
No,
that this is what is appreciated, and this is what is encouraged, and this is what makes people smile. And that's what your frames do to you, because you don't really see them. They just form you into something from the moment you are conceived, not even before you're born, so to say.
I mean, it's a preconceived frame, and if when you fit into the frame, of course, nobody says anything. They said, oh, what a lovely picture you're painting. Mm-hmm. Right, but as long as it's a painting or it's a frame that we can recognize, you're good, right? If you are breaking out of the frame,
and actually these frames people have about you or about life or about the world or whatever, you most of the times you only discover them when you break the frames, and that can be very painful. So that we avoid breaking people's frames or our own frames because of that. Because that's when people say, hey, don't break the frames. And then you know, okay, here was something going on. Do you know what I normally tell people when they complain that other people around them are complaining about them? You know, you do some, they've experienced that some people are getting angry of them or complaining or, you know, whatever. And I say, time to celebrate, because now you're really going out of your comfort zone and breaking your frames.
Oh, yes. And we're breaking other people's frames.
Yes.
And that's what hurts the most.
Yes, because it's about their expectations. Mm-hmm. And when you break their expectations and their cozy life by being someone else, mm-hmm. it's uncomfortable for them. And that's when they complain. So it's good.
It's so good.
So good. But it's so hard. It's so hard because, as I said, you don't see it. And you had I think people will be envy you when they hear about your experience waking up one day and realizing that, hey, I can see myself in another way now. I can remember stuff, because I think normally it's a hard work to come to that point.
Yes, but I mean, it doesn't quite stop there. At first you kind of wake up or you realize that you need to do something else, but then you're still within a structure which holds you and which you hold onto. And so it's a long process that ensues after that, where you often live in two different worlds at the same time. And so for me, the art became both an outlet, but also a bridge I kept them separate for a long time, I have to say. Mm-hmm. And I kept like an academic world on the one side, and then my personal interest, there became a personal interest mm-hmm. that shouldn't be mixed with the other one. And this is, after a while, this is no longer tenable. But I was pursuing a mandala painting for a while. I was kind of obsessed with it because it was something that I needed. My soul was saying, mm-hmm. paint, paint, paint more, paint more, paint more. And then eventually I ended up in a situation where, I don't know, you know, the forces were working in my favor, or maybe counter to what would some people would say my normal career. And I thought I was actually going to be unemployed for a while. So I actually applied to a preparatory art school.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But then I ended up being employed full time anyway. So I did art school and and work at the mm-hmm. same time, full time, both things. And I made it. It was an amazing experience. But mm-hmm. I was all the time wrestling with these two things, like art and academy. So how am I going to reconcile these? How am I going to reconcile these? and the art world, and they were saying, you have to use your experience. And I was like, no, art has nothing to do with that boring stuff. So it was just like one on the one side and one on the other side. And I just couldn't really reconcile them until the day I actually found intentional creativity.
Ah, intentional creativity. That's interesting. Can I ask one thing first? We go dive into that, because were you at some point hesitant to, in you know, the art thing and your academic role? Did you have problems with telling people about what you were doing with your painting and stuff?
Well, I mean, to be absolutely honest, when I didn't really tell people, I mean, if you tell people that you paint, they say, oh, lovely, that's a really lovely hobby.
Yeah.
And I actually sold the painting, and then a person very dear to me, and it's like, oh, you sold the painting, okay. And then there's like, and I was like, what? No hoorays, no cheers, no nothing. Yeah, but you're not really an artist, are you? So, and that was because I was seen to be something else, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, again, if we refer to your frames again, if people had me framed as a certain, you know, picture, right? A nice, I don't know, a nice Victorian portrait or whatever. And then I, you know, here comes Jackson Pollock or something totally absurd, something that just kind of destroyed that image. It's like a nice, steady career towards something that is understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Art is for, it creates, you know, it's like, I don't know, the traditional image of the artist is not making any money. It's something that you do all your life and you struggle at it. And then, you know, you have to be a real artist. It has to be done a specific way.
Yes, real artist is so interesting. What is a real artist?
Yes, and artists, of course, debate this all the time.
Right? Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have the concept of a real academic person.
Well, I guess I have a better chance there. But my experience is that the more you tread into another world, then the scaffolding that holds that building up also become a little bit shaky, and they say, so where are you going to be? Are you going to be here or are you going to be there? Because it's like, God forbid that you can be two things at the same time.
Yeah, God forbid if you are too much.
Yes, and God forbid that too if well. You're a woman and an artist and an academic, and God forbid that you're both weak and strong and vulnerable and powerful at the same time, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know if this is special for Sweden. If someone listens and is from, you know, from the States or Europe, wherever else, tell us, please. Is it only in Sweden you just can be one thing at a time, or is it common all over the world?
But I
don't matter how broad or small your boxes or frames are. I think at some point people want to they want an easy life, and it's easy to just have one Jessica the academic.
Yes.
That's good. Or Jessica the artist. Choose. Yeah. Because it's easier for them, right?
Yes.
And in the painting world, you had some problems with being in the academic, but that was only within you, or was it with the...
Well, it was mainly for me, because for me, of course, art is a craft. To a certain degree. And then there's the other part of today's current, you know, art scene or a lot of contemporary art is conceptual art, and a lot of artworks are accompanied by, you know, artist statements and the kind of, I mean, let me be really prejudiced here and judgmental and say a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it's like bullshitting going on, and of course it's not bullshit, but for me, since I already knew how to write a text like that, I can make anything sound theoretical and conceptual, and this is about X being that and perspective on that, and, you know, pull in theory and different disciplines, and for me that was not art. That was too easy.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to struggle with the fact that that art was more than learning the craft. Mm-hmm. So at the same time as, you know, I wanted to embody art as profession or as trained artist, then I still have to come to terms with what art is and what an artist does, I think. And maybe I'm not really fit for I can't really fit into like the mold of the traditional artist, although being assigned the title real artist would, you know, it would come with a certain status, it would come with a certain acceptance. And don't we all want that? We want to be accepted, right? Mm-hmm. And that nobody should question, nobody would question what we're doing. Right?
God forbid.
So, and I agree with what you said before about, I think it's a very, I don't know only for Sweden, but very Swedish thing that you're okay if you go, you can do psycho things if you're a psychotherapist or a psychologist, or if you have credentials, if you have a certification, or, you know, you will be asked, are you certified to do this? Are you trained to do this? Mm-hmm. What are you?
Yes.
So we are very much identified with that, and also a lot with our age. So the concept of a second career is, you know, it's a growing concept, but it's not very big in Sweden just yet. In the UK and the US, they have realized that this is a necessity and a must to allow people to have second careers. Mm. But still, it's like, it seems to be important for us to have new frames for it, you know. So if we can call it second career, then okay, so now we're finding a way to get in there, right?
Yeah. Actually, in Sweden, I think it's because we are a small country with a bit of a farmer's mind or trader's mind or something, because you often hear people say, if you're studying something and you continue studying because it's fun or you're personal developing or whatever, mm-hmm. and what they ask is, so what will you become?
Yes. Mm. Mm. Yeah.
And I meet people from like Africa or whatever, and they are so surprised because, I do this because it's developing, because I like the knowledge, because I do this and that. Why do they all of them ask me what I will become? Yeah. So we want easy, simple labels. So I hear that you had something going on here between your academic life and your artist thing, painting and stuff. And you found, as you said, intentional painting.
Yes, intentional creativity.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, and it's a type of visionary painting method, which is based on the idea that if you create with intention, it does things with our brains, mm-hmm. that helps us articulate or bring form to that which we have access to in a hidden place, or things that we have access to that we are actually not aware of. Mm-hmm. So it sounds a little bit woo-woo, but it's like reaching out with your brain into a space where you haven't been before, because this is what we tend to do, is that when we process something, or we get a question, or we get a problem that we're supposed to solve, then we tend to go back to our previous experience, and then we pick the worst experience we have from this, and then we apply that. So because this is the way that we protect ourselves, right? We protect ourselves because we protect ourselves from defeat, from feeling bad or sad or not succeeding. But with this method, or by, it's kind of like, it's almost like putting the intention outside of yourself. And then you're kind of fooling your system into sifting this through your right brain instead of your left brain, so that there's not a filter that says you can't, or that you shouldn't, right? Mm-hmm. So you just take it in, and you let it come out in a vision you didn't even know you had. And then we can apply our left brain thinking on top of this and organize and make it happen in a, like a world, in a material world where we act and that we live inside of.
Yeah. So the left brain is a rational, logical brain, half process, thinking process. And the right brain is our emotions or stuff.
Well, I mean, brain science aside, I mean, that's the typical, it's like the logical sorting, organizing of the left. And then the right brain is more of the creative, the feeling, it's not critical in the same way. Let's say if the round shapes, the kind of more like formless is right, then and the left is more directed and analytical. But again, they've shown that both brain halves do kind of have both, but this is the dominant tendencies, yes.
Yeah, I read the book Thinking Fast and Slow, and he talks about, he's a brain researcher, and he talks about our two brain thinking processes. Mm-hmm. Mm. And one is the logical, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the other one is more emotional. And that one also often chooses to go the easy way, just having fun, enjoying, pleasure, whatever. Mm. But I think you're onto something, because when I deep dived into, for instance, storytelling in my thesis, which you actually tutored me when I wrote that, I also dived into the emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Our connect, what we do with emotions. Yeah. And because storytelling is so much about emotions. And what research can show is that emotions are like knowledge. But you don't think about knowledge anymore. It's more like a highway to knowledge. Your emotions are highways to knowledge. Yeah. So if you go with your gut feeling for something, you most possibly will find a reason for why you feel like that if you start thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if I apply that to what you told me, it's like if you can, as you do with the intentions, make people take stuff out from their emotional centers, their emotional memories, whatever, put it on the canvas without thinking about it, and then look at it. They will discover stuff they had forgotten.
Yes. I mean, the difference between, I mean, I think painting in general is tapping into a type of communication that we do or that we have at our disposal. Or it's kind of like a direct path to something that is not directly connected to words, right? But we use words because it's an easy way that we talk to each other, right? But then the difference between, for example, just meditative painting, which I think is very good for the soul as well, you know, it's like just working with paint or form or shape. Mm-hmm. When we do it really intentionally, we ask for answers, we ask and we project into, it's like this, I'm going to work with this. Then it's like we steer our imagination and we steer our brain towards a certain focus. And it's as if we can take that, which is not yet articulated, let's say a story, if you like, and then put form to that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's also why we, in this process, we don't only work with painting, we also write.
Yeah.
Yes. So we both write and we work with visioning. And I find it interesting what you're talking about, the heart and the emotional, and they're now talking about the heart as a brain, right? And that the brain of the heart has an energy field which extends much farther mm-hmm. than our seeing, that it, before you even know somebody comes through the door, your heart has already felt it and registered it on one level.
Yeah, and I truly believe there is so much more going on within us in our processes than we are aware of. And if we can stop blocking ourselves, which you help your clients with, so much more we can discover about ourselves, right?
Yes, absolutely. And whatever the mean to that, some people are dedicated to the art of, you know, maybe music or singing or dancing or write, and some people do the dancing, but the painting and the writing and just getting this incorporated kind of like in the body. You hold something and you make a shape and you say it and you help it with words. It's like all of that is helping you articulate and find knowledge within you, or get it to come out, right?
Yeah, let it free. But tell me, because I didn't really hear, I'm very curious about in what way this made a good connection between your academic world and your art history.
Well, because, right now, as you know, I'm doing this Wonder Woman course, and it's just one of the ways of actually working with something in practice that I've worked mostly academically with before. And even if I can then tell people, it's like, look at our traditional stories, look at our history, look at what they're doing in media, look at what happens in films, and let me show you how wrong that is, or let me show you how we can take that back. This is to work with intentional creativity. It's like to give people a tool to actually work with things that they are suffering from or bad thoughts about themselves. So to actually go in and directly work with the effects of like an unjust or unjust, unequal society where we attach different values to men and women or to different classes, to different colors. It's really a good tool for liberation.
Hmm. That's interesting. So, what do you think is the main? Because you were talking about the all the impact we get from society and all the images affecting us and stuff. What do you see is most common effect of all this when you meet people in your courses, for instance?
What people forget to do is they forget to just be quiet and to be still and to find that moment or that that insight, which they to find what they really want. That seems to be like a big nut to crack for most people, because they don't even stop to think about what they want. And so when you ask people, it's like, so, and a lot of people are just like, what am I going to do now? Because at some point or other, at some point in your history, it might not be that I or my work attracts a lot of the younger generation, because it's mostly people who have already reached a certain age and maybe they've been doing something and they notice sooner or later that that's not working for them. So, and it's often because we go looking for this happiness. It's going to happen to us, right? So, and they've been relying on the happiness to come from the outside all these years. It's come from a job, it's come from a relationship, it's come from children. And then all of a sudden there are no children and the job is boring and the husband is maybe boring, or they've already got rid of the husband or the wife. And then it's like, okay, but now what? Now what? So it's like, so what do you want to do? I don't know. They just know they want to do something different. Or they want to be feeling better about it. So I think that's a common thing among people that come to me. They have both a curiosity and a need to know what's next and how they're going to find, how they would be able to find that. And because they are not finding it outside of themselves.
No. I think that's hard because, and also if you're depending on people outside of yourself, I think that might cause you to drain yourself.
Yes, of course. And it's, you become a little bit like, I mean, we all have our addictions, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have our food addictions, we have our exciting event addiction, we might have a love addiction, we run from one relationship to the next, or we travel all over the world. And and it's like we just run and run and run, and it's just go faster and faster and faster, and we keep filling that hole, but it never gets filled. It's like a black hole.
Yes,
because it can't be filled from the outside, so it has to be filled from the inside, and what to fill it with. And that's what my entire work is doing, is helping people to find what it is that they have inside that they can, you know, actually not fill it with, because they already have it, but kind of stop that urge to fill it. It's like to see, okay, like you're saying, it's like, what are my powers? What are the powers that I can gather? And if I don't have those powers, like, what is that mission I want to go on? And what powers do I need then? And how do I go about getting that? And that's usually much closer than they think. But you have to get close enough. It's like, you know, it's like when you get older, you get near, you don't see much, but it's like, you kind of have to come the other way around. It's like, you have to come really close to yourself in order to see what's going on.
Yeah. And sometimes you need to step back to see the whole picture.
Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't help. But I totally agree, because, you know, I paint sometimes. Mm-hmm. This is one of my favorite stories, because I can't paint. I always said that I cannot paint. My sister paints. I do stories. Uh-huh. And then a friend of mine challenged me to start painting. Uh-huh. And to make a long story short, I just need to tell you that what I discovered when painting was that as soon as I tried to paint what I thought other people would appreciate, that's when I can't paint.
No, it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work at all. So I usually say I can't paint anything, because I can't draw a horse. I can't, uh-huh. No, it just doesn't look like anything. Yeah. But if I can just let go of everything and just enjoy myself with colors, I suddenly create things that we actually have made people say, can I buy this?
Great.
But I don't sell it, because I don't see myself as an artist. I'm not a real artist. Yeah. So we don't go into that discussion. But you see, and that made me draw the conclusion that, just as you say, that as long as we try to create stuff, not only on the canvas, but in our lives, that we create because we think this will please someone else. Whatever we do, it will drain us, because it doesn't come from our inner source. Mm-hmm. Because we feed on others in order to make it. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And if you can help people to find their mission and their powers and their drive and their inner force, you will let them free to a completely new and creative life, where they actually are not dependent on others, and where they will find more energy the more they create. And the more they do stuff, they will feel more energized, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like I've created a short exercise that I can give you a link to, actually, if you want to.
Yeah.
Which is all about finding out what you actually love. It's not about, it's like, how do I make these people love me, or what do they want? It's like, what do I want? And because we know what we want, then we are happier. And when we're happier, we're also more attractive to others. And then we just attract good stuff to ourselves. It's like love generates love is a good cliche, but one that actually works.
Yeah, I think it's true. Too bad. I need to practice my love power.
Yeah. And you're the perfect participant in one of my courses, that if you don't know how to paint, perfect.
No. I know how to throw colors around. Yeah. Anyway, so what is the superpowers? Can you give us some examples of what kind of superpowers we are talking about?
The superpowers are very individual, of course. And as I'm just putting the finishing touches on a video about why I use Wonder Woman as a metaphor or as a representative, mm-hmm. of somebody with superpowers. And yes, she has very tangible superpowers, but one of the superpowers that she has and that we seldom talk about is her superpower of telepathy. and her superpower for, she has a superpower, she can speak all the languages of the world. Mm-hmm. So, which means that communication can be a superpower, and having the empathy can be a superpower, and it could be a laughter, it could be a superpower. It could, like you say, it could be that you're very good at telling stories, or it could be that you always see what's missing. I mean, it doesn't have to be laser beams and flying through the air, but the what is it that makes us able to fly through the air? And what does that mean in our own life? What does that mean? I'm not flying at the moment. I'm, you know, if I'm stuck on the ground, where do I want to fly? Mm-hmm. Where do I want to fly to? Why would I give you flying powers if you have no need to fly? Right? Why would I give you the best opera voice if you're not willing to step up on stage and sing, if that's not your thing, right? So the superpowers are very much tied to your next immediate mission, so to speak. So it's every mission has its own superpowers, I think. And then of course we can have some fundamental ones, but they're so individual that I can't really say. Yeah.
Thought maybe you have some examples. What are your superpowers, Jessica?
Well, I actually do have X-ray vision, and and I think, well, when I that's, which means basically I can, I'm a very good analyst. And not only of the logical, but also of the bigger picture, but also of the small details and how they fit into the big picture. Mm-hmm. So I'm very good at, if I have four or five people in a room, I pretty much have them scoped out within an hour or so.
Mm-hmm. So,
but it's a, and another superpower is that you use that, which is good to use in the situation for the people. And you're not using your powers against somebody else. It's like they're there to support others and to guide others. So, and I guess that's another superpower of mine, to find where people are at, which level they are at, and then meet them there.
Yeah, I'm actually realized that I have a superpower. One of my superpowers. I'm like a portal to other worlds. So I can move you in time and space.
Ooh, that sounds
good. Because that's what you do when you tell a story. You move people to another world.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So you're an entire transport system in your own right.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
So it's a good formulation. So let's wrap this up, I think, because you already told us we will get a link where we can actually discover who we...
Well, I made a series called The Aces Up Your Sleeve. Mm-hmm. And I made one that was connected to clubs, which has to do with work situations. I made another one, which has to do with love. And it's actually part of my other course, Nitty Gritty. But I'd be happy to share a link to at least the one that has to do with work. Mm-hmm. And it's The Ace of Clubs. I'll be happy to give you the link for that. And you can access that at any time. And there are other ways to do to work on these things. I made a whole course called Nitty Gritty, which is all about getting real with yourself. It's like, let's look at those things and do the work on them, the little bit of hard work on them, but at the same time, such rewarding work to change things around, to shift perspectives.
Yes, we're very thankful for that. That's very generous of you, and I think that would be appreciated. What I also heard is that you should practice being quiet and still.
Yes. That's the tough part.
And that you can start doing at once, my friends. Take a walk in the forest without anything else on and just listen to yourself or wherever you are. Turn things off and have a moment every day. I do that, actually. I try every day to do that. And another thing was try to not please everyone else, but start with looking for what is pleasing for you. And that was a very rough translation of what you heard you say, Jessica. But if you forgive me, because happiness need comes from within yourself first, right? So find out what you have inside. And that was your link. You help us to find out what we have inside. Is there anything else you want to say before we stop this conversation?
I don't know. You asked me about the link between Wonder Woman and my academic work, and my academic work has always been engaged with helping or making visible the injustices against women, and to help us see ourselves in a different way. And that's why Wonder Woman is such a good metaphor, because she represents transformation. So if we see her powers and her, if we disregard the fact that she's a white, privileged, semi-naked, popular cultural figure that's been exploited, you know, in many different systems, if we see her transformational powers, if we actually see that she was quite unusual, and she can make people tell the truth, and but she also uses it on herself. So it's that thing. It's like to be true to yourself, be still, and to be true to yourself, it can sometimes just take two breaths, literally.
Yeah.
And it's like you can do wonders. In 10 seconds, you can travel around the world twice. Just two breaths, right? So I recommend that as well. Just take those two breaths. It's an amazing technique.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jessica. And I really appreciate our conversation. I hope you also enjoyed being in this conversation with me. And to everyone listening, take those breaths and take that moment for yourself and try that link and see what you can discover about yourself. Thank you for listening to this talk show. If you have questions, reflections, or think you know someone that would be the perfect guest, please reach out through the contact form on reader.com. And hey, don't forget to subscribe. See you soon.